and happened to come across one of the first lessons I preached here many, many years ago. And as I was going through it, I thought that would be, I think, a great lesson for tonight. So I took it and modified it somewhat and thought that that would be a good theme for us tonight. It comes from Ecclesiastes chapter 7. Most of us know about the book and its writer, Solomon. We know about Solomon's life as the last king of the United Israel. We know about many of his adventures and events that happened in his life. We know about him being given wisdom above all men by God himself. Ecclesiastes is an unusual book in some ways. And parts of it are rather hard to understand and interpret. But it seems like in this section in Ecclesiastes, what Solomon is wanting to do for us is to tell us about life as it really is. I mean, give us the straight story. No sugarcoating, you know, no fluff. Exactly how it really, really is. Not necessarily how we may want it or how it is in our dreams, but how it really is. And so he gives us some advice about how to cope. How to cope in a world that is cursed with sin. It's straight talk, and parts of it are rather difficult to swallow. So in Ecclesiastes 7, Solomon tells us, gives us some advice. And of course, Solomon had done everything in his life. I mean, here's a guy who had untold wealth and resources. So if you could imagine it, he had probably done it. He had lived it. And because of all of this wealth and resources, he was able to experience things to a degree that most of us never could. And he learned a lot of lessons from those, especially from the mistakes. He learned a lot from the mistakes he made in life. And he made some big ones. And it seems like in chapter 7 that he realizes that a life that's lived without God, without God's wisdom and instruction and direction, is a life that's wasted. He uses the term vanity, of course, a lot throughout the book. A vain life, an empty, fruitless life. Any life where the person is trying to live apart from God and apart from his book is ultimately a wasted life. And so Solomon wants us to know how not to have a wasted life. Regardless of the circumstances, regardless of the situation, the condition, Solomon tells us, this is what you need to do. If you really want to have a good life, and if you really want to focus on what's important, see, Solomon knows by now, at least to some degree, what's important and what isn't. And he gives us this lesson in terms of seven is better than's. In other words, it's contrast that he makes. We find the first one there in verse 1 of chapter 7 in Ecclesiastes, where Solomon says, a good name is better than precious ointment. There's the first contrast. A good name. Ointment or perfume. Well, why would he use that? Of course, at that time, ointment or perfume was costly. It tended to be. But this was something that only affected you outwardly. In other words, you'd put ointment on or perfume on or whatever, and it would only affect you outwardly, and it would only affect you for a short while. And then its influence, its effect would be gone. So Solomon says a good name is better than that. Because a good name is a name that has positive influence. Don't you know when you hear certain people's names that they have a good influence? You know who they are and you know how they've influenced people for good. A good name is a name that stands for integrity. A good name is a name that's trustworthy. When that person says, he or she says that they're going to do something, then you know to their best ability, they're going to carry through on it. They are reliable. A good name stands for character. Someone that has a strong moral character. They're honest. They're sincere. They don't tell one person one thing and just the opposite to someone else. They're straightforward. They're not hypocritical. They're sincere. That's what a good name is. So a good name can change people's lives. Has a good reputation. That's what a good name does. It has a good reputation. And of course, this comes from the inside. This comes from the inside. In Proverbs, we have a lot of wisdom given to us in Proverbs. Listen to Proverbs 22, verse 1, though. Proverbs 22, verse 1. Where the wise man, again, contrasts good names. He says in verse 1, a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, loving favor rather than silver and gold. He says a good name is even more important if you had a choice between having a good name and riches. The wise person chooses a good name. It lasts longer and can do more good. Riches can do certain types of good things. But he says a good name has more power than riches. Because it can influence people for good. It can help people to do good. What does our name stand for? See, that's what Solomon wants us to understand. Does our name stand for quality? When people hear Bobby Stafford, is that something that is good? Does that come with a good reputation? Does that stand for someone with character? See, what does our name stand for? What does our name stand for? Well, then he moves on. The second part of verse 1 in Ecclesiastes 7 says, the day of death than the day of one's birth. He says, the day of death is better than the day of one's birth. How can that possibly be true? I mean, you can't hardly get to a more basic issue than this, can you? Birth and death. I mean, that's about as basic as you can get. So Solomon says, there's at least some ways in which a person's death is better than a person's birth. Some ways. In Philippians chapter 1, Paul talks about departing from this earth and some things that every Christian needs to think about. Philippians chapter 1. Paul writes this beginning in verse 23. Paul says, "For I'm hard pressed between the two, having a desire to depart and be with Christ, which is far better. Nevertheless, to remain in the flesh is more needful for you." Paul says, it's better for me personally, he says, to be with Christ than to be in this world that, again, is cursed with sin. Because being with Christ means no pain and no sorrow and no death. No illness, no suffering. Whereas staying in this world means all of those things. Pain and suffering and sorrow and death. So Paul says, for me, it's far better if I can go and depart and be with Christ. He says it's far better. That's at least one way that our death is better than our life. Because we know if we live a faithful life, we can go and be with God. Paul, in more than one place, talks about, you know, the suffering that we go through in this life is nothing compared to the glory of being in heaven. Says it's just, you can't even compare them. Regardless of how awful the suffering and pain is that you go through in life, he says, you know, even if you suffer for 70, 80, 90 years, he says that's nothing compared to an eternity in heaven where you'll experience nothing but joy and happiness and pleasure. So in those respects, then the day of death is better than the day of birth. Of course, we don't want to be dark and black as far as, you know, thinking about death all the time. That's not what he wants. Just like Paul said back in Philippians 1, verse 24, nevertheless, it's better for you that I stay here. So as long as we're in this flesh, there is good that we can do. There's good that each of us can do. Every day there's good. Paul knew that, so Paul said, even though it's a whole lot better for me to depart and be with Christ, I know because there are things I can do for you that it's best that I stay here, at least for a while. So there is this balance that we need to see. Yes, we need to look forward to being with Christ in heaven and enjoying that incredible state, but at the same time, we need to understand that we're living in this world now, and there's a lot of good that we can do. There's a lot of good for other people. There are many people that need to hear about salvation. So that's what we need to do. You know, there is a time and a place for both. This helps us cope with the world. The third contrast he makes is in verse 2. He says it's better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that's the end of all men, and the living will take it to heart. Well, why would it be better to go to the house of mourning than go to the house of feasting? Doesn't everybody want to go to a party? Don't we all want to go to a place where there's fun and good times? Certainly that's a part of life, and we want to experience those things. But in which situation are you going to learn more about life and what's important? In the house of feasting or the house of mourning? Well, you know the answer to that, in the house of mourning. You're going to learn a lot more about life. Taking a stroll through a cemetery is an eye-opener. That's what it is. It's an eye-opener. Because you see these people. Some you may know, most you probably don't. Some may have lived but a few days. Some may have lived 100 years or more. But they all have something in common there in the cemetery, and that is everybody there, their life ended. They're not alive anymore, none of them. They've all passed. That causes us to think about our own temporal nature, that we are here for a short time. And what's important is what happens during that dash. On our gravestone, born this day, died this day, and there's always a dash in between. It's what we do with the dash. That's what's important. What we do with the dash. And by going through that cemetery, we learn a lot about what's important. Everybody likes to go to a party and a carnival or whatever, and those are great, but they don't teach you much about life. They don't teach you much about life. Of course, the world says, you know, let's party our whole life. That's what everybody should do, is just have a good time their whole lives. Don't think about the future. Don't think about the next life, because most people, many, don't even believe in a next life. So why think about it? Just think about the here and now. And a lot of TV commercials stress that. You need these things now. Why? Because they'll make you happy. Why having a better detergent will make you happy, I'm not sure. But apparently it does. So it makes you happy. So do that. See, that's what the world says, but that's not what God says. It says, think about eternity. Think about eternity. House of mourning. People in time past, especially in some countries, would mourn for a long period of time. Some would put black wreaths on their door. Some would put black curtains, even go to that extent, over their windows. And the people in the household would wear black for days, maybe even a month or more, because there was a death in that household. And they thought about it. And you can learn a lot in those situations. And then he goes on. He says in verse 3, here's our fourth comparison, sorrow is better than laughter, for by a sad countenance the heart is made better. Sorrow. You know, you can tell me a joke, and I'm not kidding you, I can forget it in less than 5 minutes. I don't know how that happens. Or I forget the punchline. I mean, it's just no time. It's just gone. But he says, again, that walk through the cemetery, you don't forget that very easily. That stays with you for a while. Because those things teach us about what's really important in life. There's a true story given about the sinking of the Titanic, and I've told this story before, maybe you've heard it. But when it was starting to sink, and of course they were trying to get the women off of the boat as fast as possible into the lifeboats. One lady was getting ready to get on, but then remembered something. So she started running back to her stateroom. And she gets to her stateroom and she passes by. She was very wealthy. She passes by all of her jewelry. She passes by all of her money, all of her nice clothes. And you know what she gets? Three oranges. Three oranges. Why? Because those three oranges would be worth far more in that lifeboat than the jewelry, the money, the clothes, those fancy clothes, or anything else. See, in a time of sorrow, of difficulty, she knew what was really, really important. Those three oranges. People who tend to have and know they have just a very limited time on earth usually know how to spend their time wisely during those last days or weeks, maybe a few months, because they know what's important. They understand what the priority is. And for a lot of those people, the things that they spent so much of their time doing now has no consequence at all. I mean, it's not important to them in the least. Don't even think about it. And they realize that they've spent so much of their time and so much of their life doing things that really didn't matter. And now they're focusing on what's important. Why? Because time is short. And they realize that. See, Solomon is starting to realize that in our chapter. He's starting to understand what's important. Well, then he goes on. He says, the heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. And he says, it is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. For like the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This also is vanity. Notice this use of fools here. Fools here are people who are not thinking about the next life. They're not thinking about what's important. They don't have the right priorities. They are living empty, vain lives. not devoted to God, not devoted to a good cause, but devoted just to themselves, and so he calls them fools. So he says, it's far better for you to hear the rebuke of someone who's wise than hear the song of fools. He says the song of fools is like the crackling of thorns under a pot. Well, what's the crackling of thorns under a pot? Well, there's nothing to it. We know how a thorn tree burns up really fast, doesn't it? Burns hot and then it's gone, just like that. Just burns that fast. Some of the Jews back at that time used thorn wood to heat food and water. What did it do? Made lots of big popping sounds and cracking sounds. But those sounds, they were meaningless. They didn't have any value. They didn't help heat the food or the water. It was just empty sounds. He says that's kind of like fool's jokes and silly stories. They don't matter. They don't help us to know what's important. He says many people don't listen to the rebuke of the wise. He says that's what they need to listen to. And of course, many people just don't want to hear what they're saying. And that goes kind of across the board for so many people. They just don't want to hear the truth because the truth is painful. The truth hurts, as the saying goes. You know, when your life is crashing down around you like the prodigal son's was when he was in a far country, his life was coming down. I mean, it was crashing. The last thing the prodigal son needed to hear was, you know, silly stories or jokes or anything else. He needed to hear the rebuke of a wise man. That's what he needed to hear. And that's true today. When people's lives are crashing down around them, they need to hear the truth. They need to listen to the counsel of the wise. That's what's important. Well, he goes on. Surely oppression destroys a wise man's reason, and a bribe debases the heart. He says, the end of a thing is better than its beginning. Well, let's just stop there. The end of a thing is better than its beginning. In what way would that be true? Well, when you come to the end of something, whatever it is, all of the dreams about it are over. In other words, you're able, at the end of something, you can look back and see it clearly. You can see exactly what happened. You can see what happened. There's no sugarcoating on it. You see it for exactly what it is. And that's one way in which the end of something is better than the beginning. The whole truth is on display now so you can see it. How many of us have said something to this effect? I just wished I... And you can fill in the blank. I just wish I could have done that over again. I just wish I would have chosen a different profession. I just wish I'd have raised my children differently. I just wish different things. I just wished. And then he says, the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Do not hasten in your spirit to be angry, for anger rests in the bosom of fools. Do not say, why were the former days better than these? For you did not inquire wisely concerning this. He says it's always better to be patient than to do something rash and foolish. Patience is a fruit of the Spirit, going back to the book of Galatians. You know, in this world, God is trying to mold us. We have the idea of the potter and the clay. God is trying to mold us so that we're going to be fit for heaven. And one of the ways he does that is by difficult times. It's by difficult times. And by allowing us to experience difficult times. He's taken that proud, arrogant spirit that many of us have at some point in our life and trying to turn that into a patient one. Trying to. Because he says, then wisdom can work in our lives. Wisdom can't be there as long as we're completely filled with this, with wrath and anger all the time. Can't do it. We can't allow temper, in other words, to go unchecked over and over. And he says, don't say, why were the former days better than these? You don't know whether they were really better or not. You may just think they were. Maybe your memory's not too great. He says, don't completely live all the time in the past. It's fine to think about the past, but don't completely live in the past. Like Paul said, you know, those things I've put behind me. Paul says, I'm looking ahead for the prize. Says, that's what I'm looking at now. That's what I want. Then in closing, he has these last four verses. He says, wisdom is good with an inheritance and profitable to those who see the sun. For wisdom is a defense, as money is a defense. But the excellence of knowledge is that wisdom gives life to those who have it. Consider the work of God, for who can make straight what he's made crooked? In the day of prosperity, be joyful, but in the day of adversity, consider. Surely God has appointed the one as well as the other, so that man can find out nothing that will come after him. Wisdom has a role in our lives, if we allow it. It can keep us from pride and doubt and resentment and a host of other things. It allows us to make a living. Wisdom allows us to make a living. It also tells us that everybody who lives on the face of this earth will have straight days and crooked days. In other words, good days and bad days. Everybody will have good days and bad days. Some will have more good than bad. Others will have more bad than good. But he says, understand that God knows. God knows how straight our straight days are, and God knows how crooked our crooked days are. Better than we do. God has appointed one as well as the other so that man can find out nothing that will come after him. God does what pleases him. He knows what the future is going to be. And we need to accept that fact. We need to be able to cope with reality. In other words, live life as it is, Solomon says. And of course, for a lot of people, the future is very frightening. They don't have Christ. They don't have God. They've never read God's Word. They don't know the Gospel. They don't know those things. So for those people, the future is a very frightening thing. But for those who are in Christ, much of that is gone because we know what heaven or what awaits us in heaven. That's what he tells us. He says, simply live life as it is. Do with it the best you can. Learn those lessons that God wants you to learn and become wiser because of it. He says, that's what life is. Is like. He says, live life as it really is. Dean chose an invitation song, and in that invitation song, there are words to cause us to think, you know, to think about our lives and how we're living them, and if we need to make a decision to change, and if there is something that you need tonight, we encourage you to come as we stand and sing this song. Let's stand, please.